I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you motherfuckers.
Politics. Politics. Humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Fart Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, and we are back. It's Fart Cop Radio, show number 125. Glad you can make it. Got a few things on the show today. Unlike show 124, I do have a slight clue it's in 125. Let's see if I can look into the crystal. Look into the crystal ball here. Oh, first thing, we're going to have to beat up Judas Maximus. Don't like the guy. About 10 years ago, he stuck a knife in an old friend's back. Hadn't liked him for a decade. So we're going to have to smack him around a little bit today. Got the end of the trip report. I know you're sad to see it go, but we had to tie it up with that last little chunk. Let's see, got some more Jon Stewart. Got some more debate highlights. Got a little bit of Ron Paul. There ain't no telling. I'm going to try to get a thing in here with Jay Leno if there's room, because Jay Leno pissed me off. Let's see, what is today? Thursday. Wednesday night, he did the most unfunny monologue. The thing is, he tricked you. You might have laughed. It's like that ice cream at the Dairy Queen. It's not ice cream, but it's cold and it looks like ice cream, so you think you got some ice cream. That's what Leno does. He puts words together, and he makes you think he said something funny, but he didn't, and I'm going to prove it. Koresh willing. Okay, let's shot at Chinecho. Can't start the big, big show without a shot. God knows what a sober show would sound like. Very, very nice. Oh, I love my Chinecho. Okay, big, big show!
This is www.bartcop.com.
Judas Maximus has pissed me off for about a decade now. Monica was 10 years ago, and he was the first son of a bitch. He hurt himself running to get in front of a camera so he could say, should we impeach him? Should we impeach him? And people started thinking, whoa, if Stephanopoulos thinks there's a serious crime here, maybe there is. He's one of those Clinton insiders. Maybe we ought to look at this a little closer. Have you heard? Steffi says we should impeach. And that got the ball rolling, and that pissed me off. These days, he's hoeing for ABC, and he's been in way over backwards to prove he hates the Clintons and hates the Democrats, so he's up there blowing every Republican he can. See? See? I'm not a Democrat anymore. See? See? Can I blow you, sir? How about you? How about you over there? Can I blow anyone in this room? Can I blow anyone in this room? If you're a Republican, get in line. My name's George Stephanopoulos. I'm here to please. So this prick is doing the Republican debate a couple days ago, and he had a bunch of chances. Why do they keep doing this with the debates? They keep asking the stupidest questions in the world. And I saw a replay, I had the whole thing taped, long story, and I just picked out the dumbest questions. And then later, you know, of course, they had a race on the whole thing. And then later you see someone else's recap of it and you think, Christ, that's a stupid, how did that question get in there? And these weren't YouTube questions. These were questions directly from Stephanopoulos. I got one example here I'm going to show you because I can't stomach much of the little fucker. But check out this extra damn stupid question. And I'm going to throw in about 8 words. And tell me that you don't think my 8 words are 1,000 times better than the words that this punk-ass little prick used. Now, I know he's up there to blow the Republicans. That's his job. So he's up there lobbing softballs at him. But between me and him, whose question do you like better? Let's go.
We have one more round. I also want to bring all of you in on this for about 30 seconds each, and I'm going to introduce it by showing everyone something that President Bush said at the Iowa straw poll 8 years ago. It was his fundamental promise.
Should I be fortunate enough to become the President of the United States, that when I put my hand on the Bible, I will swear to not only uphold the laws of the land, I will swear to uphold the honor and the dignity of the office to which I have been elected, so help me God.
Congressman Tancredo, that was the core promise of President Bush's campaign to restore honor and dignity to the Oval Office. What will you restore to the Oval Office?
Now, isn't that the worst? Well, it can't be the worst because there's so many stupid damn questions they're asking the chair. But all this is a big giant softball. You know, it's like, what's your favorite book? Who's your favorite author? Who's your favorite Supreme Court judge? Who's your favorite baseball player? What will you bring to the Oval Office? Oh, I'm going to bring lilacs and little daisies and, you know, who gives a fuck? You know what a lot better question would have been? Let's go back.
That was the core promise of President Bush's campaign to restore honor and dignity to the Oval Office.
I would have asked, do you think President Bush kept his word? Now, see, instead of, oh, I'll bring daisies and lilacs, suddenly they got to make a decision. Are they going to rubber stamp every stupid-ass lie and mistake and crime that the president has committed in the last 8 years? Or do they say, oh, no, no, he screwed this up. He didn't bring any honor. He didn't bring any dignity. He didn't bring any of that back. He's committed crime after crime, and I'm not going to be like that when I get in the office. That would have been so cool. Are you going to bring honor and dignity back to the White House like President Bush did? Now, see, that puts them on the spot. Now they got a thing. Now they got a decision they have to make. Instead of lilacs and bullshit, they got to make a decision. Are they going to stick with this lion monkey, or are they going to stand up and say, no, I'm going to run my White House with honor and integrity. And if my people get subpoenaed, they're going down there to talk because we don't have anything to hide. That'd be real nice to hear a candidate say, wouldn't it? But they're all afraid to. But why should they if they got a butt wipe like Stephanopoulos throwing them softballs? What kind of tree would you be if you had a choice? Oh, I think I'd be a big fucking mighty oak. What about you, George? Jesus. And this passes for journalism in America. Shouldn't they just pass a law? Shouldn't they just shut down every journalism school in America? Every journalism course in every college? Why fucking bother? They teach blow the candidate, blow the official, get on his good side, and write whatever he tells you to. And stick with him no matter how much he lies to you. That's what journalism is now. I'm sick of it. How about you? Oh, and one other thing. I have a specific dislike about Keith Olbermann, and then I have a general dislike of which he was guilty the last day or two. But, you know, Olbermann, he really talks like a, I mean, I like the guy, but he talks like a pompous prick. When he's screaming at Bush, he'll say something like, I dare suggest that you, sir, have not, you know, he doesn't speak language. He doesn't talk like, not like me, but he doesn't talk like anybody else. He talks like he's reading a speech from 100 years ago. He's got that problem, the same exact problem John Kerry had. He's talking official. He can't use words that people use on the street. He's got a, you know, like George Will. He thumbs through a thesaurus and comes up with some word that you hadn't heard in 10 years. It's just bullshit. Keith, why don't you talk from the heart? Why don't you talk from your gut instead of trying to be so, the way the Constitution is written, that's how he talks. I hate that. But what he was guilty of the other day, and oh, it just makes me want to strangle somebody. In the last Democratic debate, there was a big fight about this deal with Pakistan and Obama and Hillary saying that was naive and him saying, well, hey, you're the one that went for the war. And then Biden jumped in and Dodd jumped in. And, you know, there's a big free-for-all going on. And Obama's going, hey, stop, now stop, stop. Everybody stop talking. We're going to another question. It's like, hey, fuck another question. Let him talk. If these guys are going to hammer it out, if the forum are going to get in a pile and start throwing punches, why do you have to jump in and stop them? Because their 30 seconds was up. Oh, God, I hate that. Why don't you let them go? Fuck the schedule. Fuck the time limit. You're on MSNBC. You don't have a schedule. There's nothing important coming up. There's nothing important on NBC, on MSNBC the rest of this year, more important than the Democrats and the Republicans getting in a pile and hashing it out. Someone would have won the argument if Oberman hadn't stepped in and stopped them from... Stop, Obama! Stop! Quit talking! Stop right now! We got some dumbass question about your favorite fish from the audience. So we don't need to know about foreign policy. We don't need to know how naive we are. We don't need to know how cruel you are to each other. We don't need to know how damn clueless you are about the facts. We don't need to know what you know about the world. We got to stop you right damn now so we can go to the... Sally with the pigtails has a question about a dog. Son of a bitch. Is it not important? You know, it's only the freedom of the planet. It's only the future of the planet that's at stake. Why would we let the contenders hash out the problems on live TV when there's a question? Oh, there's a YouTube question. Some lady in a bathroom in San Francisco wants to know about something. So you got to stop talking, Obama. Stop talking. And he's one of the good guys. He's on our side. But apparently someone put a gun in his mouth and said, Keith, if anybody goes 2 seconds over, we're shooting your kids. So no matter what happens, if Hillary pulls out a knife and sticks it in Obama's gut, don't let him moan more than 30 seconds. Don't you dare. Because we got some bullshit question from the crowd. And if we don't get all 21 questions in, oh, we're all going to hell. Jesus Christ, it's not even journalism. It's just bullshit. You learn more from Jon Stewart, Saturday Night Live, the Colbert Report. That's why these guys are so well respected. Because they're actually giving us something besides the crap we get from the, quote, major networks. Sons of bitches.
Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld were both on television last night answering questions. A very unusual occurrence. Let me see if I can put it in a some type of perspective for you. To see a giant squid, that's unusual. Certainly a Bigfoot sighting, very rare, Lord knows. But Rumsfeld and Cheney answering questions on the same day on television, it'd be like a giant squid having sex with Bigfoot. As the ghost of Jim Morrison claps giddily. That's the planets aligning, my friends. And yesterday they did align. Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld both answering questions publicly within a 24-hour period. And if I may state the obvious, not a good day to have a high-definition television.
Oh, Mr. Cheney, your pores are... Ooh. Is that Dante's Inferno I see in the...
Let's begin with Donald Rumsfeld. Hey, he looks great! My guess is he's sleeping fine. Anyway, this morning he testified at the Senate inquiry into the friendly fire death of Army Ranger Pat Tillman and the ensuing even less friendly cover-up. Rummy's been gone a long time. Does he remember the dance?
I personally, and I'm sure all connected with the department, extend our deep regrets.
Ooh, personal and sincere. Personal and sincere. You like that? Is that nice? Come on, I'm setting up a bit here. Personal and sincere regret. Check. And now for the statement of why you actually have nothing to regret.
I was not intimately knowledgeable of the nature of those investigations. I don't recall seeing it. I'm sure there have been a great many changes made that I'm not aware of. I was not involved. It's not possible for someone to know all the things that are going on. Possibly Dick does. I have a vague recollection. I just don't recall it. I don't understand the question.
Yeah! He's been gone a while, but he jumps right back in. It's like raping a bicycle.
What else happened on the big trip report? Let me think. Next morning, woke up, checked in with the family, hadn't seen them yet. Met a few of them at lunch at El Maguey's, I think it's called, in St. Louis County. That was good. They had a fine skit. They had Chinookle just sitting right there on the shelf like, hey, it's just a bottle of tequila. It's like, yeah, and I guess your mother was just another mother. That worked out good. Then, of course, we had to drop by the Ted Drew's, get a little frozen custard. You just can't go into St. Louis without stopping at Ted's. It's just how it is. Later that afternoon, we had little errands to run. I had to go run see my good friend Augustinio Petty, pick up my bottle of Chinookle. Thank you again for that. You know, it's the kind of gift keeps on giving. I'll have that at least a month, maybe two. It's not like I took it home and just turned upside down, glug, glug, glug. That's where people say, Bart, you drink that fancy tequila. Well, yeah, I don't drink it like water. Okay, then what? Then went to see my brother and sister. They bought us a fancy steak dinner. All right, so now it's, let's say, Tuesday morning. Time to head back home. Of course, as we're heading out of town, we had to stop at the White Castle's, get some sliders. Only got four. So from there, we shooting down Highway 44 back to T-Town. And I'm driving along, you know, look at my rearview mirror. I see a yellow car, and he's really moving. I'm thinking, oh, what's up with him? So I'm moving to the slow boys lane. And this car shoots past me, just, how'd it go? It just shot past me. I'm thinking, well, hey, I'm doing 70. He must be doing, geez, I don't know, at least 100. Only he's in some kind of fancy car. I didn't even recognize it, how fancy it was. So a couple of minutes later, see another car in my rearview mirror. Shoots past me. It's like, WTF. Now, I recognize this one. It was a Lamborghini. And then a few minutes later, another one shoots by. It was a Maserati. And I'm thinking, well, this is weird. So then, as time went by, we got bunched up. They slowed down enough to where I could read the cars. The cars were all done up like race cars, you know, full of logos and stuff. And on the back, it says GreatAmericanRun.com. And I'm thinking, well, what is that? Is this like a TV show? I'm looking around for a truck with cameras. You know, what is GreatAmericanRun.com? Okay, traffic jam breaks up. These guys, bam, they hit the gas, and they just zoom off on the horizon. Apparently, they were racing. It's all I can figure, you know. What are you going to do on a race car besides race? Duh. So we continue our journey here back to Tulsa. And we see one of these race car drivers. He shoots past an exit, and then he backs up the on-ramp. And we're thinking, WTF. There's at least four WTFs we saw. So this guy, I'm watching him in the rearview mirror. He's backing up the down ramp to get onto the highway, and so apparently he's hiding on whoever's coming up behind him. Racing across the country in a super hot car, a radar detector would be your best friend. I think this fellow that was doing the backing up, somehow he got wind of a cop. So he shot past, backed up, and effectively hid where they couldn't see him. They can't see through the hill, and they're not going to notice him as they whiff by. So we come over the next hill, and a cop has done pulled one of these guys over. Apparently, they had no special permit or anything to be racing. But how do you do that? I went to that greatamericanrun.com and tried to look up what they were doing. Just didn't have time. I just wanted to see. Yeah, they apparently were racing. I don't know. How do you race across the country? Do you say, I mean, the guy got a ticket, so he's racing across the country. I guess you just use your radar detector, and you speed when you think you can, and but what a drag to have that kind of car. But your insurance is $3,000 a month because you've gotten 9 speeding tickets in 1 week trying to get across the country. If you're one of them race people, if you're one of them NASCAR people, go to the greatamericanrun.com. You'll see a bunch of fancy stuff in there. Anyway, that was about the extent of the excitement. I hope you enjoyed my little trip to St. Louis. See the Pretenders.
Our responsibility is to spread democracy here and make sure that we have it. This is a philosophic and foreign policy problem, because what the president was saying was just a continuation of Woodrow Wilson's making the world safe for democracy. There's nothing wrong with spreading our values around the world, but it is wrong to spread it by force. We should spread it by setting an example and doing a good job here. Threatening Pakistan and threatening Iran makes no sense whatsoever. We went in, and I supported going after the al-Qaeda into Afghanistan, but lo and behold, the neocons took over. They forgot about Osama bin Laden and what they did. They went into nation building, not only in Afghanistan, they went unjustifiably over into Iraq, and that's why we're in this mess.
Governor Huckabee, excuse me.
America as his divine messianic force to be. not a policeman of the whole. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you're too arrogant. You don't change your ways. I will rise up and break the backbone of your power, and I'll place it in the hands of a nation that doesn't even know my name. Be still and know that I'm God. Men will beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning. Nations will not rise up against nations, neither shall they study war anymore. And I don't know about you, I ain't gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more.
Thought I might tell you a little story about two big mistakes I made. And I know I've made a lot more than two. And these weren't like terrible, deadly mistakes. They were just, I think in both cases I was afraid to take a chance. Or maybe the smart move was to not take a chance. But I got two of these to tell you about. The first one goes back to the old Hard Rock Island, my first nightclub I ever owned. I got into it by accident. I was working for a guy I didn't like. He had a string of nightclubs, and I wanted to get away from him. So one of the club owners had a heart attack, and he was having trouble finding someone else to put in to run that bar for him because he had the pool tables, the jukebox, the pinball machines, the poker machines. He had all those in the club, and if the club's closed, he's not making any money. So if the club is open, hell, one pool table can make $100 a week. It can make $200 a week. So if you got five pool tables, a jukebox, couple of those poker games, et cetera, you can make $1,000 or $2,000 a week just by being in the club business. So whenever a club came available, he would go rent it and then look for somebody to put it in there. Because when you're in the club, they can't knock you out. That's one thing. Now and then we put machines in clubs that we can't get, and they'd say, hey, we don't like the music on this jukebox either. Come down here with 100 new CDs, or we're going to put it out on the street. And that's always a bad thing to happen. So he owned all these clubs. He needed someone to get in the club and rent it for him. I was sick of him, so I said, hey, I'll do it. And he said, cool, here's $3,000. Go out there and make me a bunch of money. So there's an old adage in business, it's a lot easier to keep a business going than it is to start a business. Since the previous owner had a heart attack, club was closed down for months. By the time I opened it back up, we had no regulars, and I didn't have a lot of let's go to club friends. So we opened the place, and we're struggling. And there was a stage in the place, but I can't afford any bands. So we just had the jukebox and this and that. And people kept saying, what you need? Here's some bands. What you need? You know, bring some bands in. They'll bring their own crowd. You get rich, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so we tried that. But I couldn't afford to pay the band, so we came up with a deal. $2 at the door, and the band gets to keep the door. So if you pack the place, the band gets a lot of money, and the crowd drinks a bunch, and I get a lot of money. And that was the way the plan was supposed to work. And it did work that way for a couple of times, but most performers, they want to get paid no matter what. If nobody shows up, they still want to get paid, which I kind of see that. But, you know, maybe there's a reason nobody showed up. You know what I mean? So we had a little bit of success. Local bands would come by, and maybe throughout the night, 100 people would show up. But they would show up like 20, and then they'd leave. Another 20 would come by, and then they'd leave. And so we never would pack the place. But we made enough kind of to get by. Oh, the other thing, the club was pretty rough. It was a biker club when it got shut down. So when we opened back up, the bikers thought, hey, look, our club's open again. So we started with the rough crowd. And I had been in bars before, but I didn't know about bars. You know, I had to have friends tell me, this is how you, well, of course, I knew how to make drinks, too, but I don't know how to make a sex on the beach. I didn't know how to make the funny drinks, and I didn't know what a Harvey Wallbanger was. I mean, there's a lot of things. My idea of a drink is a whiskey and Coke, or a shot of whiskey, or a shot of tequila, or, you know, the idea about, oh, I want a little of this, and you put some of this in, and here's that blue stuff, and then you add some of this, and then you put this in there and shake it, and then you light it, and that's for weird people. If you're looking to get drunk, you put the liquor bottle to your lips, and you turn it upside down. That's how it works. One thing about the bikers, we put up a sign. You know, these bikers were coming. I didn't know about motorcycle gangs either, and in Tulsa, I don't guess it's a big problem, but, you know, there are places, I guess California, Florida, Texas, where, you know, the red biker didn't want to sit by the blue biker, and all hell breaks loose. If it's like the Crips and the Bloods, you know, you don't want to have that going wrong. So someone suggested I put up a sign that said, no leather, no colors, no chaps, no chains, or, you know, I had a little list of things that, and they set fire to that. I'm standing there trying to entertain behind the bar, and someone said, hey, dude, your front door's on fire. It's like, oh, no. So I run up there, and that didn't work so well. You know, the other thing, it's a real drag owning a nightclub if you don't have a lot of money, because I find myself, you know, like there'd be a, you know, four or five people in the place, you know, a couple guys playing pool, a guy and a girl over in the corner, kind of this. And then some old guy come in and say, give me a bottle of beer. It's like, all right. The bottle of beer back then was like a dollar and a quarter, and it cost me maybe 40 cents. So a guy, you know, I give him his beer, and he says, so what's going on? So now I got to entertain him. Now I'm doing stand-up for 85 cents. I owe this guy a show. So I have to, you know, I'm making shit up, whatever's in the news. You know, I got to make small talk, and then maybe some second guy would come in. Pretty soon I'm making $1.60. Whoa, look at me. I got an audience of two people here at the bar. Anyway, so we needed a change. We needed something to happen. Then these guys came in. Here's my big mistake. These guys came in, and they were they represented a band called Loud, L-O-U-D, and that stood for Love Over Universal Destruction. You know, if you think about it, when you weigh the two, you got on one hand you got love, on the other hand you got your universal destruction. Yeah, might go with the love. But what they were kind of a Kiss tribute band. And he it was real well done. He brought me a professional-looking, of course, I'd never seen one before, so anything was professional-looking compared to what I'd seen. But he brought me a portfolio kind of thing, which showed pictures of the band on stage and, you know, groups they'd backed up with and countries they played in, that kind of thing. And I went, well, you know, I don't know, it sounds okay. And they said, we'll play for the door. We'll, you know, we're not asked for a lot of money. I was going, well, and this wasn't really prejudice on my part, but like the main guy, he had little tiny, teeny, tiny hands. I mean, like deformed hands. I don't know how you play guitar with. He had little kind of baby hands. And for some reason, this rough biker crowd I had, I just something in my mind told me that this band and the biker crowd were just not going to get along. I didn't know if they would attack the stage or throw shit or just walk out, or I didn't know what the reaction would be. But somehow, because we'd had the bands we'd had were, you know, you're kind of bikery, bluesy guys, you know, playing, well, you know, your old blues kind of stuff. And then here come these guys. They had makeup and firebombs and stacks of amps and all that stuff. Like I say, it was a real professional looking deal. But somehow, this sleepy little biker club, it just didn't seem like it was going to work. So I told them, no, don't think so. So they go across town and make this deal with some other guy. And from then on, they just pack the house every time they play there. 300 people show up. Oh, just big, big mistake. If I had said yes at the time, hell, I might still be in the bar business. This was in 85. But I just didn't think it was going to work for something, you know. It just didn't seem like a fit for me. If I had had a little more, I don't know if it's courage or brains or less brains or whatever, I would have said, yeah, let's do that. And it all would have turned out cool. And I'd be in the club business for 23 years now. But no, that didn't happen. So that was big mistake number one. The big mistake number two involves someone that you might know. As you might know, if you've been reading a long time, in the year 2002, we decided to put on a fest for Julie Steele, Julie Hyatt Steele, that was caught up in that Whitewater business. And don't know if you heard this before, but I never intended to ever be a public person. For the first 6 years, nobody had ever met me, nobody had ever seen me. I never, ever left the house as Bart. But then when this situation came up, I knew that I couldn't not be there. I couldn't go there and, you know, wear a damn mask. What am I going to do? So I kind of came out of the old Bart cave, so to speak. And we're arranging this big party to raise some money for Ms. Steele. And we figured we were going to have it in Washington, D.C. It just figured like a central place in that we were trying to get some people from New York and Philly and Baltimore and, you know, the Carolinas, whatever, trying to get these people to come in. And we had the opportunity to hold this at James Carville's restaurant. Somehow, word got out that we were looking for a place to hold it. We were talking to a couple of hotels and this and that. This was our first fest. We were even dumber then than we are now. But we were talking to several hotels, trying to get some help. I remember my good buddy Dennis was helping me look for some places in D.C. Somehow, word got to James Carville, and he had his staff, his people. Of course, he don't write. He has people for that. His staff wrote and said, James would like to be a part of this. Would you like to hold the big party at his restaurant? We thought, oh, boy. You know, I mean, it was really trying to think. It wasn't really my decision, so we asked Julie, and she said, yeah, let's make that happen, because the status of having Carville involved, and this is, like I say, 2002, so those of you who rabidly hate Carville now, this is before he was rabidly hated. This is so far back, people still like Bill Clinton. That's how far back it was. So, big party at James Carville's place, and something, don't guess I ever told you this before either, but it was expensive. James did not give us the place. He offered us what he said was a reduced price on the rental of the place, and we agreed to pay that price. So word got out, big party at Carville's. So then I got an email from this guy, said his name was Barry Crimmins. And he said, Bart, you got to call me right now, because I got big news for you. I got to talk to you about this party you're going to throw. Trust me, call me right now. So I called him, and he said, dude, he probably didn't say dude, but, and this is the way I remember it. Barry, don't hold it against me if I get it all wrong, because this is how I remember it. I'm doing my best to remember. So Barry and me get on the phone. He said, Bart, you got to let me MC this show. He said, I'm a professional comedian. I've been doing this for years and years. You might have heard of me from back in the Boston comedy circuit. And I go, well, no, what do I know about Boston comedians? But he said, I'm telling you, I can do this. I've done 100 of these before. I know what I'm doing. I can be the MC. I can do a stand-up act. I can introduce people. I can do anything you want. I don't even think he was going to charge me. Maybe he said he'd do it for gas or for a hotel, something. But he kept saying, I know what I'm doing. I can handle this whole party for you. And I kept saying, well, gee, I don't know. And this is in early 2002, and I don't think they had a Google back then, but they didn't have a Wikipedia back then. You know, I think that was kind of before you could just put someone's name in a search engine and get their life's history. But he kept saying, seriously, I can handle this. It would be a mistake not to give this to me. You really ought to let me do this. And I kept saying, well, I don't know, because I didn't know. It was I'd never been to the place before. You know, I just had no idea what I was doing, as always. And if I'd only had the brains to turn it over to him, because he could have run everything then, but no. You know, if you ever heard the story, we were worried about security. I hired three cops. One of them didn't show up, bastard. But I hired three cops, one for the door, one for inside, and I don't know where the third guy was going to ride with Julie over to the gig or something. I forget how it works. We were worried about security. A little snippage here. But even if at a minute per person or a minute per couple, with 200 people, that's like an hour and a half. You know, the party was supposed to start at 7. It's 8:30. I'm out there checking IDs, and there's people going, hey, hour and a half. We're missing the party. Can we go inside? So somehow we streamlined that operation. By the time we got inside, anyway, big, big panic. I sure could have used Barry Crimmins. But like I say, at the time, I just didn't know what a Barry Crimmins was. Oh, and then I found out. Years later, this is in 2002. So in 2005 or 6, I guess 2006, Air America Radio premieres. And Barry was Randy Rhoads, I guess, head comedy writer. I'm not sure what you call it, but like before Randy starts speaking, the guy would, a performer would come on and do a thing. You know, Bush is so stupid that this here, and, you know, they would take the news and twist a little bit and kind of do a little, like a Saturday Night Live skit. Well, Barry was writing all those for her. He's no longer with her. She's got other comedy writers, I suppose, but that's where I re-ran into Barry Crimmins. And I thought, damn, the guy who's doing comedy for the biggest liberal talk show in the United States, he's the guy I turned down. Boy, do I feel dumb not letting him run the show. But that's not anywhere near how dumb as I felt the other night. Oh, you know how some things are just crushing. I'm flipping through the channels, and I saw something on one of the obscure channels about, I think the title was When Stand-Ups Stand Out, I think is the name of this thing. And I thought, oh, okay. And it mentioned some bunch of famous comedians. So I thought, yeah, I'll tape that. If there's something good in there, I'll snip it out and we'll put it on the Breakup Radio. But it turns out the show was a tribute to Barry Crimmins. I'm going, oh, Jesus, how big is this guy? Because I didn't know. And so I sat down and I'm watching the show. And they've given the history of the Boston comedy circuit, whatever, in the 80s and 90s. And I don't know how he got started. It probably says so, but you know how it is when you're watching a show. you can't categorize everything the way you'd like to. But Barry, I guess he was a stand-up comic of some note in Boston in the 80s, so he opened his own comedy club. And he opened it at a place called Ding Ho's. Now, Ding Ho, apparently, nothing I say you can take for true, but if you look up Ding Ho at Wikipedia, you'll get more detail. But apparently this Chinese food place was open during the day, and then at night it became a comedy club, I think. Or maybe Barry got the back room, who knows. Somehow Barry opened up Ding Ho's, the comedy club, and started doing real good, or eventually did real good. The way they talked about it on the special is if you were a comedian making $25, now see, this is how far comedy has come in 25 years, but if you're a Boston comic making $25, Barry might give you 50 to play at his club if he thought you were funny. To a comic, no, I remember when I was 20, because the comic said, Barry more than doubled my price, so what are you going to say no to the guy? So the good comedians started going to Barry's place. He knew a good comedian from a bad comedian. He invited the good guys to play at his place, and pretty soon he had the hip place. Since he was paying a 50, now the other guy had to pay 65 or 70, and so gradually the comedians started making a little bit of money, and when you can make a little bit of money, you get a little competition going. And so the competition made the comedy better. Because of Barry getting this pot stirred, comedy started doing better in Boston. And all these people were unknowns, but they weren't going to stay unknown for long. So Barry's running this nightclub, and I forget what triggered it, but they said at some point they were doing good business, a lot of people there every night, and at some point it just boom took off. They said on this one day, all three newspapers had people there in the audience that night. There was two, three camera crews set up, I guess the local affiliates. I don't know if it was a big show or they just metaphorically, they all showed up at the same time. But all of a sudden now, Barry's running the hottest club in Boston. And because he starts making a lot of money, now other owners come into town and open up with, I guess, fancier, more money kind of nightclubs. But it just kept building and increasing and increasing. So Barry Crimmins got on this film anyway, is credited with pretty much creating or refining or doing something to the Boston comedy circuit. They said Barry provided a place for, if you were a comedian and needed a place to sleep, you could go to the barracks and sleep on the floor or sleep somewhere, but it was just a place where you could go. It was like a shelter, a safe house for the local comedians. But because of that, these guys could get together and kind of compare notes and learn a little bit more about their craft and refine their technique and all that, and everybody was gaining from this, and it just became bigger and bigger. And then one of Barry's comedians, these people who were staying at his house and performing at his club, started making money. But I want to give you a list of the comedians that Barry Crimmins is, I don't know if he's responsible for them. He had a big role in building their careers, and I know that because this film was shot in, wild guess, 95. This was a documentary film that was finally put on DVD last year, so I don't know when it was shot. But at some point, years ago, I didn't know this, and I've talked to him on the phone. I know Barry, I'm always saying he's my good friend. Well, he's someone I've actually talked to on the phone, and when we talk, sometimes we talk for an hour, hour and a half. The reason I know that these comics all owe him something is because apparently Barry got sick a while back and had no insurance, and I don't know if he needed an operation or just he needed some money, so all these comedians got together. And that was kind of the basis for the show, that they all came back to honor Barry or raise money for Barry. So they all owed him to that degree. But check out this list of people. One of the wildest is Lenny Clark. Now, you might not know him by name, but if you watch Rescue Me, he's Dennis Leary's crazy uncle. And he's just as crazy as he can be. And he's kind of a big, kind of fatter guy now. But back in the day, he had long hair and he was kind of a football player looking build. And he was like the wildest of the bunch. Let's see, who else is there? Janine Garofalo. Janine, sorry about, sorry to date you as being a young comedian in the 80s. Bob Goldthwait. Dennis Leary, who I think has the best show on television, bar none right now. He was one of these people. Paula Poundstone, you know about. I like Paula. I think she's funny. Colin Quinn used to do the Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live. We mentioned Stephen Wright. Then there's Kevin Meaney, who you might not know, but he's a comedian, done a lot of work. And there were some more people. But they all came here to honor Barry Crimmins, raise some money for him because he gave them their comedy start. And yet some dinghole in Tulsa, Oklahoma doesn't think Barry's good enough to run the show all these years later. I feel like such a tool. Barry, when you hear this, I'm so sorry. I don't know if people would associate Barry with the word modest, but if he would have said, hey, shithead, I'm the best comedian you're ever going to get hold of. If you got no budget, you got no comedian, and I'm a real comedian, I can do it right, and you don't have the brains to let me do it. I mean, that's what he might have said if he wasn't kind of a modest, classy guy. But basically, he always said, well, I'm here. If you change your mind, I'd be glad to do it, and I can arrange it. And matter of fact, I think he offered to cancel something about Buffalo. I think he offered to cancel a gig. I think he had another gig that night that they were going to pay him real money. And he said, I'll cancel that and come down and work for you. And I just didn't have the brains. I didn't know. If I had known then what I knew now, boy, I'd have done whatever it took to get him there. So, Barry, this is my big public apology to you. I might even put this one on the main page to let everyone hear it, because I had no idea you were that big. But that's an indication how stupid I was. I made some big show business mistakes in my life, but I think this is probably the biggest one. Hold on, let me get a shot of Chinako. It's a rare inside-the-show shot of Chinako. This one's for you, Barry Crimmins. Top comedian, star builder, kingmaker. And it all started with the ding ho.
Obama's rival, John Edwards, doesn't eat with real Americans for a stunt. For him, it's a special occasion.
30th anniversary. He said they would celebrate with a number of things.
We'll go to Wendy's. We'll go to Wendy's.
Is that your idea of a big plan?
A double cheeseburger and fries.
You know, John, I know you're committed to the whole Two Americas thing, but on your 30th anniversary to take your wife out to Wendy's... On your 30th anniversary, why not take your wife out to the nice America? You know, even the America goes to the nice America on their 30th anniversary. As for the Republicans, the Republicans generally make less of their gastronomical habits. For instance, Rudy Giuliani has no food-related posts on his website. That's because everyone already knows the only thing he eats are terrorists.
You obviously didn't read my speech, but Chris, if we have actionable intelligence on Al-Qaeda operatives, including bin Laden, and President Musharraf cannot act, then we should. Now, I think that's just common sense. I don't know about you,
Senator,
but for us to authorize the place where the people who attacked, where the people who attacked 3,000 Americans were not present, which you authorized, and then to suggest that somehow we should not focus on the folks that
Senator
did
Obama,
attack 3,000
we're well over,
I think is a problem.
We're well over time. Senator Clinton, I must ask for your... Senator Clinton, give me your response to this. I'm going to give you both a chance here, but Senator Clinton, please give me your response to what we're hearing tonight.
Well, I do do not believe people running for president should engage in hypotheticals, and it may well be that the strategy we have to pursue on the basis of actionable intelligence, but remember we've had some real difficult experiences with actionable intelligence, might lead to a certain action, but I think it is a very big mistake to telegraph that and to destabilize the Musharraf regime, which is fighting for its life against the Islamic extremists who are in bed with al-Qaeda and Taliban. And remember, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. The last thing we want is to have al-Qaeda-like followers in charge of Pakistan and having access to nuclear weapons. So you can think big, but remember, you shouldn't always say everything you think if you're running for president, because it have consequences across the world, and we don't need that right now.
Senator Dodd, no, I owe Senator Dodd a response. Your name was invoked in several of these answers. Please take 30 seconds here.
Well, I just want to say, look, and Barack, you know, I certainly said, look, I made a mistake in that vote in 2002. I don't deny that. But when you make a mistake, as you will, on something like this, I think if I had the courage, I made a mistake on the vote in 2002. If you're making a mistake today, you ought to stand up and say so. It was a mistake, in my view, to suggest somehow that going in unilaterally here into Pakistan was somehow in our interest. That, I think, is dangerous, and I don't retreat from that at all.
But this came back to me. And so
all right, Senator Obama, 30 seconds, no? And then I have to stop this.
Way to jump in there, Keith. This is one of the most lively exchanges I've ever seen in any debate. Maybe there are some I forgot about, but here they're actually kind of going at each other. This is what a debate is supposed to be. But this bullshit about, oh, you get 10 seconds, and you get 15, and then you get 30, and then you get 45. God, I hate that. I guess Olbermann's stuck with doing what he's got to do, but if I was the moderator, I would have shut my damn mouth and just let him go at it.
I did not say that we would immediately go in unilaterally. What I said was that we have to work with Musharraf, that we should continue to give him military aid contingent on him doing something about that. But the fact of the matter is that when we don't talk to the American people, we're debating the most important foreign policy issues that we face. And the American people have a right to know. It is not just Washington insiders that are part of the debate that has to take place with respect to how we're going to shift our foreign policy. This is a fundamental
question. I have to end this segment here because...
This land is my land. This land is your land. This land is my land. You sure, man?
Sure.
Because Georgie want to wage war on all fronts. And me, I'm a peace seeker when it's all said and done. We got enough problems here. Why we messing with them? Politics in the mix and now we're guessing again. Speculations as to who's a threat. Shoot, shoot, shoot them up, Georgie. Because you's a vet. Who's up next now? Against the rootin' tootin'. Invading and raiding is what it's used to doing. And I can understand war tactics. But without dialogue, then it's just more caskets. Damn. And everybody's scared to death.
They scared.
Turn on the news, bad news, be prepared to step.
Uh-huh.
And there goes our favorite guy.
There we go.
Georgie kissed the world and made it cry.
Georgia, Georgia, why oh why?
I don't think Jay Leno is very funny. I think he's a lazy comedian. I think he should be ashamed to make the kind of money he makes because he doesn't do any work. He doesn't have any imagination. He doesn't have any comedic gifts. But what he does have is a computer program that writes his jokes for him, and they're the same jokes again and again, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, the same jokes over and over again. Let's run through a couple. This first joke is about Barry Bonds hitting the big home run. And so Jay gets out his formula, he gets out his program, and he punches in a couple of keywords. You got baseball, you got home run, you got San Francisco. And because he's a lazy, lazy comedian, he goes for the cheapest joke. So he turns this into a San Francisco joke, and you know what that means.
756 last night. Pretty amazing. I haven't seen guys in San Francisco this excited since Liza Minnelli put out that Greatest Hits album.
And if you thought that was funny... Jay Leno is probably your favorite comedian. Okay, the second joke is a double dipper. It's about rats. So Jay goes to his computer and he punches in rats. And what pops out? You got lawyers, you got rat parts and hot dogs, you got breeds a lot, you got disease. So he picks a couple out.
Anaheim Stadium has admitted to having a huge rat problem. They say the whole thing started right after they had lawyer night.
Oh, stop, stop. I'm afraid I might bust a gut. I'm afraid I might break my stitches.
Here's the part I understand. People go to baseball games. They see a rat. Oh, they get all upset. Oh, they get all nervous. Yet these very same people, they go to the concession stand. They eat two hot dogs. What's the difference?
These jokes are so bad, I wouldn't do them on Bar Cop Radio. I would just say, I can't do a show this week. I got nothing. I'd rather say that than give you that bad a humor. And here's Leno making, what, $100,000 a week? And he's got 30 riders? And that's all he's got. 30 riders, his 30, 40 years in the business, $100,000 a week salary, and his little computer program that tells him what's funny. But it's not. That's terrible. As you know, in the news lately, they had this thing about some lead paint being on some toys from China, so they had to recall them. So JC's Comedy Gold.
Earlier today, a very confused President Bush ordered a ban on all pencils imported from China because he said they may contain lead.
The only thing that made that partially funny is that it's a how stupid is Bush joke, and 70-something percent of America agree that he's the biggest, dumbest, worst president ever. So that made it a little bit funny, but he saw something in the paper about a pencil recall, and he thought pencil, so he goes to his program, he types in pencil, and it comes back lead, and eraser, you know, and a bunch of things, and you think, oh, lead. Oh, I get it. We do a recall joke about China. The next hot story he seized on was John Roberts, Supreme Court Justice, had a seizure. So he goes over to his little program, and he punches in seizure, and this came out, and that came out. You got to be careful here. You notice I didn't do any jokes about John Roberts having seizures, because he's not having seizures because he's an evil bastard. He's having seizures because he's human, and there's just not a lot of humor there. But don't worry, Jay could find some humor with the word seizure.
John Roberts back on the bench, even though he is prone to seizures. I guess you heard about that. He's prone to seizures. When President Bush heard that, he said, that's great, because I'm prone to illegal searches, so we could get together. Could have searches and seizures.
And the only reason that's funny is because people want attention to be called to Bush's crime. 75% of the country don't like the criminal bastard. And since the people like Tim Russert and Bob Schieffer and Brian Williams, they won't talk about any of that. So when people finally see something mentioned about Bush's crimes, they perk up a little bit. Next is probably the lamest joke of the night. And, you know, it's hard to pick out which one is the lamest joke. Jay Leno always going for the basest, most common denominator joke. He wants to talk about the shuttle taking off. And so he goes to his little program and he punches in astronauts. And it comes back, astronauts driving drunk, astronaut wears a diaper, stupid stuff. And he comes up with this great joke.
The Space Shuttle Endeavour was launched, oh, just a little while ago at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Got off nicely. Sadly, 1 hour into mission, pulled over for a DUI.
Wonder if my good friend Barry Crimmins is listening to this. I'm going to send him the little thing since I talked about him. But Barry, as a professional judge of comedians, would you hire this guy? Jay's even from Boston. I guess Jay made it before the pack that Barry was in. But when you were hiring comedians for your club, Barry, would you hire somebody this fucking awful?
And a woman in New York State had almost 400 gallons of oil accidentally pumped into her basement. Now the basement is worth more than twice as much as the house. No, she says she's going to have the oil pumped out as soon as it goes up another $2 a barrel.
Terrible, terrible joke. The price of gas is high. Oh, is it really, Jay? It's only been high for years and years and years. And funny, he couldn't come up with a way to tie the price of oil to Bush. No, wouldn't want to do that.
In Germany, a 59-year-old woman had a pencil removed from her skull that had been stuck inside her head for 55 years. Fell on the pencil when she was four, stuck in her head 55 years. Doctors said they don't usually see this much lead in someone's head unless they've been hunting with Dick Cheney.
Partially interesting, but not funny, that this is the second lead joke he's done tonight. So when he goes to his little program and he punches in lead, it's going to kick out pencils and bullets and x-rays can't go through it. The list is probably like 20 or 30 things long for any word or any action, any person you punch in. And now here's this lady who's got lead in her head. He's going, oh, lead in her head. Punch it in. Oh, lead, bullets, Cheney. We'll drag Cheney into this. And again, it's partially funny maybe because you think about Cheney, the wild, crazy man out shooting his friend in the face. But where's the humor, Jay? Do you really pay writers to give you these lame jokes? These are terrible. These are like third grade jokes. All right, last one here. You're probably as sick of this as I am. But he wants to do another joke about the shuttle. Isn't it weird he gets stuck in ruts? Seems like pretty much every day there's a lot of news. I don't know how he ended up with two lead jokes and two shuttle jokes. But this one is about the shuttle often having a delay taking off. So he goes to his little computer. He punches in delay taking off. And guess what shows up? It's just not funny. He needs a new computer. He needs a new program. These are like Bob Hope jokes. These are jokes that worked pretty well in the 40s and 50s, maybe even the cutting-edge 60s. But, Jay, it's a new century.
Well, according to a new government study, fewer than 40% of the space shuttle launches ever get off on time. And most of the time, the shuttle sits there on the launch pad for more than a day. And I think I found the reason. Show the footage. Take a look. Now, Ellen, can you go on close on the wing? What does it say there? Can you see? JetBlue.
JetBlue? No, it's more like Joke Blue. That's awful. How does the man stay on TV? Well, I guess he doesn't. They fired him so they could put Conan in there, breathe some new life into these jokes from the 40s and 50s. Thank you, God. And I admit I'm a Letterman man more than I am a Letterman, but Dave can also be extremely lazy. At least now and then, Letterman will surprise you with something. He doesn't go to his bag of 50 jokes and use the same jokes night after night after night. Oh, and a reminder, the only reason Leno beats Letterman in the ratings is because Leno's on the West Coast in L.A. where all the stars are. Letterman typically has Sarah Jessica Parker's husband and Jake Johansson. What a show! Meanwhile, out in L.A., Jay's got a bunch of hot movie stars on, so yeah. Jay, it's a shame all that money you make, and you're so lazy. Could you just try a little bit? You're known as a hard-working man because you do like 300-400 shows a year, but you just coast through them. You just tell the same old jokes again and again. That should be a crime.
Get up, get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, like a sex machine, get on up, get up, get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, like a sex machine, get on up. Machine. Get on up. Wait a minute, shake your arm, then use your palm. Stay on the scene, like a sex machine. You got to have the feeling, sure as your bone. Get it together, right on, right on.
Interesting situation out of Florida. You may recall, last month, a gentleman named Bob Allen was arrested for offering an undercover policeman $20 to allow him to perform oral sex on said officer in a public restroom. Mr. Allen is a state Florida lawmaker who authored a bill that outlawed lewd or lascivious acts in public, and he's also the state co-chair of John McCain's campaign. Yeah, it's not going well. But all that is still not why we're mentioning it. We're bringing it up because of the just-released audio tape of Allen explaining how this happened to the police.
Wouldn't you hate to find yourself in a position where you had to explain why you offered the cop money to blow him? I'm going to have to help out with this a little bit here because the tape is kind of foggy. And when John played this for his audience, he showed the words on the screen, so I'll be your words on the screen. Okay, this Bob Allen's words are, I certainly wasn't there to have sex with anybody, and certainly wasn't there to exchange money for it.
If I was guilty of anything, it's of having a $20 bill and a mouth. And loving too much. No, Allen says the real reason he offered to fellate said cop for $20 is as follows.
So Republican Bob Allen's words trying to explain why he wanted to blow the cop are, this undercover officer is a pretty stocky black guy, and there's other black guys around in the park that, you know, I am about to become a statistic here.
He's not gay. He's afraid. His thinking is, hey, you wouldn't hit a guy with a in his mouth, would you? And a guy with a, I'm gonna, come on, it's your. For more, I'm joined by senior political correspondent John Oliver. John, I have to say, this whole thing again. Bob Allen, Florida lawmaker.
Yep.
Just introduced a bill calling for harsh penalties for public sex.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
busted for allegedly soliciting sex in a public bathroom.
Zing! The old switcheroo works every time.
And John, if that wasn't bad enough...
Which I would argue it is.
I mean, this guy's got a whole car ride down to the police station to come up with some sort of excuse. And the best thing he came up with is, I panicked when I saw a black guy.
I know, it's pathetic. I thought of a couple off the top of my head just standing here. I have a terrible lip condition that can only be cured through contact with other men's penises. I had a bad headache and I thought I saw an Advil on another man's penis. I tripped and fell mouth first.
Okay, John.
Onto his penis.
Yes. Okay, we get it.
But John, look, in his defense.
Yes.
Black people are terrifying.
Ah. John, these lawmakers, these public figures, this guy, Mark Foley, Reverend Ted Haggard, they try to outlaw things that they themselves want to do.
Yeah, because it makes the fruit forbidden, which is that much hotter. And we all know what they say about hot fruit. Hot fruit. It's quite good.
All right, John. Don't these guys give themselves away to their proclivities by reacting so severely?
Well, not really. There are enough people against these general kind of acts that they don't stand out. But they do sometimes err by being too specific. For instance, Randolph Bing, Republican, South Carolina, just introduced a bill outlawing nighttime rooftop sex with pumpkins.
Nighttime rooftop sex with pumpkins. You're saying... this man enjoys that.
I'm saying Halloween's a coming, and if you live in South Carolina, for God's sake, grease your shingles. John?
Thank you very much. All nine Republican candidates skip church to take part in a forum on ABC's This Week. The highlight, when George Stephanopoulos asked each contender this question.
What is a defining mistake of your life and why?
At least one candidate managed to be both honest and divisive.
To have a description of my mistakes in 30 seconds?
I mean, here's a hint. All right. It starts with annulling my first marriage to my second cousin, and it ends with my kids from my second marriage supporting Barack Obama because they hate my third wife. Ba-boom! Now who wants to talk policy mistakes? Zing! Zabadoo! I'm sorry. I'm being told John Oliver has something on this. Yes, John.
Yeah, John, I've got two more.
Two more what, John?
Two more things Bob Allen could have told the police instead of being racist. Number one, I have tonsillitis and I thought that man's penis was a flashlight.
All right, number two?
Number two, I'm bulimic but I hate shoving my finger down my throat.
All right. Awesome.
Well, there you had it. Barcart Radio show number 125, we'll say, is in the can. And boy, we're glad to have that behind us. As you may or may not know, my computer done broke again. The fellow at the shop, the technician, seems to think it's because I had Testor hard drives. And that's been causing problems for 2.5 years. Oh, geez, for 2.5 years, it's been rebooting 5-10 times a day, and I just figured... I wear the damn things out. You might not know anyone that works a computer the way I do. Every 6 months or something, I wear out a mouse. Twice a year, I wear out a mouse pad. Keyboards, I buy probably once a year. Computers used to be every year. This last one's lasted 2.5 years, but it's just because I'm so in love with rebooting and then rebooting and then rebooting some more. Remember how long I've been telling you? I type something and I sit there and I stare at the screen and I wait for my words to catch up. I don't know if it's the hard drive or not. I have yet to find a computer that can keep up with me. Not that I'm some Evelyn Wood typist here, no. I type fast, and I think faster than I type, but I just hate to sit there and look at that damn hourglass because I'm a busy man. I got shit to do. But hey, all the pressure's off. Got the double issue done now. Matter of fact, there's a chance it caused a slight cannabis headache. I have to go seek a cure when I get done with this. But hey, I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you subscribing. And if you're listening and not a subscriber, shame, shame, shame. I'm going to get to work on show number 126 now. I'd like to thank all the people who helped with today's show. I'd like to thank the St. Louis Saxman for his musical contribution. I'd like to thank Chicago Jim for all his musical contributions. All the songs you never heard before, they came from Chicago Jim. If it's the same old that you heard 100 times, yeah, those are mine. Here I am in Baked Potato, Oklahoma. Once again, it's 105 today, and it's just awful. I mean, you go out to get the mail, and you come back and need a shower. I just can't take 6-8 showers a day. It's just not in my nature. We talked 4 or 5 issues back about people who live in California, how they got it so nice. You know, I got a little spoiled. Went to San Francisco, 72 degrees in the middle of July. It can spoil a fella, and I'm starting to think that that whole business about, I figured out, people in California pay about an extra $2 million for the niceness of the weather over their lifetime. No, that's over their working life. That's life from 20 to 65. An extra $2 million they put out just to have a little nice bit of weather. Now I'm beginning to think it's worth it. If I could just get somebody to take a check from me, a $2 million check, maybe hold it, that'd be great. We're all moving to California. As soon as I get someone to hold my $2 million check. It's Friday. The weekend's here. Mrs. Bart can be home soon. Going to go fix my headache. Maybe have a shot at Chinako. Watch a little poker on the TV. Boy, what a weekend. Well, this is Bart, live from hell, signing off.